At The Moth, we're using the power of storytelling to connect teachers with their students. Once a student develops their story and voice, they can show up more authentically in the classroom, their relationships, and beyond. Which is why we developed the Moth Teacher Institute, an annual conference that brings together educators who want to use the Moth storytelling techniques in their classrooms and communities. The programming features live storytelling, panel discussions, and hands-on workshops to help find, shape, and tell your own true personal stories. To learn more and apply, visit themoth.org/edu.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut.
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Mit Wieso Steuer? Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.
Du willst eine richtig sweete Karriere? Klar, schon mal an Ferrero gedacht? Nutella kennst du. Das ist eine von über 35 Ferrero-Marken, die Menschen weltweit verbinden. Inmitten dieser Marken beginnt dein Weg. Ein internationales Umfeld, in dem du schnell wächst und deine Ideen was bewegen. Für jeden Karriereschritt, denn bei Ferrero gibt es mehr Möglichkeiten, als du denkst. Bring dein Talent ein. Mehr unter ferrerocareers.com.
Welcome to the Moth Podcast. I'm Mark Solinger, and on this episode... Whether you watch the big game for the great plays, for the seven-layer nachos, for the funny ads, for the halftime performances, my personal favorite game was the one Beyoncé played at, football, like storytelling, brings people together. Because these three stories aren't just about football. They're about family, growing up, and the things that are revealed by the games we play. First up is Dame Wilburn, who told this story when she hosted a main stage in Traverse City, Michigan. Here's Dame, live at the Moth.
Some random snowy Saturday, when I was a freshman in college, I sat down at the cafeteria table with my friends, the Klingons. Now, they basically were an amalgamation of dudes that you would never let into a fraternity. They were art majors and theater majors and English majors, and they were all like heavy-duty sci-fi nerds and Trekkies. And when I sat down, these guys were talking about football. Now, football is my favorite sport. And I used to spend every Sunday watching the Detroit Lions lose with my mother. And every Sunday, my mother would say, "Damien, you could play for the Lions. I mean, you could play for the Lions." Now, I'm sure she meant it as an insult, but I took it to mean that my latent athletic ability meant that I could be a football player. So when they were discussing this at breakfast, my ears popped up, and I said, "Are you guys going to play football?" And they said, "Absolutely." Now, I need you to understand that the Klingons had made themselves into a fraternity, and they all had nicknames. Right? So there was Oscar the Grouch, Beaver, Chew Toy, there was Dr. Detroit, and then there was Buddha. Now, Buddha was 6'4 and weighed about 300, 325 pounds. He was a wrestler, had a 4.0 GPA, a theater major, and he sang tenor in the Madrigal Ensemble. This is what happens when you go to a liberal arts school. So I said, "Yeah, I want to play football, but are you guys playing real football?" Now, I'm not an athlete, so the way I had gotten out of doing any athletics was telling everybody I wanted to play football. The way I had gotten out of playing football is that with a girl, most people want to play touch football or play flag or whatever. So when I said real football, they said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I mean tackle." And the guys looked around and said, "Well, no." And I said, "Well, if you're not going to play tackle, I'm not going to play with you." And they said, "You want to play tackle?" "Yeah." They're like, "All right, meet us at the front lawn of the school in about 30 minutes. Turn your phones off." So I go back to the dorm, change into my most fluffy, cushiest clothes, and I am excited because I've seen the Lions play. I know how to play football. I'm prepared. So we get outside. When I get outside, everybody is like picking what they want, what position they want to play. And I say, linebacker. And they said, you sure you want to be a linebacker? I'm like, look, I don't run, I don't catch, I don't throw. The best I can bring to the table is I'm an immovable object. Linebacker. And I knew that football couldn't be that complicated because it made perfect sense. You attack whoever isn't dressed like you. I got it. The guys that are wearing blue are on my side. You're wearing purple, you die. I figured it out. So we go to line up. And Buddha lines up across from me. Now, I go into a three-point stance. Again, I've watched football, so I know what I'm doing. So I go into my three-point stance, and Buddha gets into his, and I figure this would be a perfect time to sort of smile at him and remind him that I'm a human being. You know, like, I need you to sort of pull up instead of murdering me. When I looked at Buddha, he wasn't there. Have you all watched Shark Week? You know how when a shark goes to bite you, the eyes roll over white? He had that kind of thing. Y'all remember Jaws when the guy said, he's like a doll's eyes, like his dead eyes. You know, he doesn't even seem to be living until he bites you. He had those eyes. And I knew I was in trouble. I was either going to have to walk away and hear this story for the rest of my life. You know, Dame was going to play football, but then she saw Buddha and she quit. I didn't want that to be the narrative. So I get even deeper into that three-point stance, and I hear, hut, 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 and then nothing. Have you ever been hit by a train? Have you ever been hit by a train that was full of other trains? When I woke up / came to, I looked over to my right and there was 2 inches of dirt, an inch of dead grass, and another 2 inches of snow. Buddha had used me to dig a tunnel. The ground was so messed up that when the spring came, maintenance would go out and put in more turf in that spot. When the feeling came back in my fingers and my toes, I tried to play it off. So I popped up out the hole. I told the guys, I forgot I had an appointment today. I need to go change. So I apologized for my absence, which was coming quickly, and I jogged into the dorm. By the time I got to my dorm door, that's when the pain hit. I got inside, choked down a couple of aspirin, took the hottest shower of my life, and stretched out on my bed. I didn't even make it to dinner. Moving seemed an impossibility. The next day, I was feeling much better. So I got up, and I walked into the cafeteria, and all the Klingons stood up. And they all started clapping. And I walked over to the table and said, what are y'all clapping about? And they said, you're the first person in history to be tackled by Buddha who walked off the field under their own power. That story spread like wildfire throughout the entire school. Now, it didn't endear me enough to the menfolk to get me any dates. I'm assuming knowing that a woman could get tackled by a 6'4" dead-eyed monster and survive it isn't really sexy. But I figured out something else. My mother was right. I could have played for the Lions. Thank you.
That was Dame Wilburn. Dame is a storyteller, Mothman stage host, and host of her own podcast, Dame's Eclectic Brain. Her storytelling began as a way of keeping cool in the summertime on her grandmother's porch in Macon, Georgia. Dame has also presented storytelling for the University of Iowa and UCLA. She lives in Detroit, Michigan. While we were putting together this episode, the Lions were about to face off against the Commanders, and I was curious if Dame had any thoughts about the Lions' path to the big game. Here's what Dame had to say. My mother was the football watcher in my house. So, my mother and I would watch the Lions every year. She would scream at the TV and tell them all the plays they messed up. She used to tell me that two things would never happen in her lifetime. One, there would never be a black president. And two, the Lions would never make the big game. My mom died in 2007, and the last thing we watched together was the big game. I have lived long enough to see a black president, and this year, I believe the Lions are going to the big game. I am living my mother's dream. Unfortunately, in the next game, the Lions lost to the Commanders. But hopefully for Dame, they'll be back next year. Our next story is from Tina Moore, who told this at a Houston Story Slam where the theme of the night was control. Here's Tina, live at the Moth.
In one sentence, he knocked the wind right out of me. Mom, I think I want to hang out with my friends on Friday. What? We have been bonding over buttered popcorn and Pixar animation films since he was two. That's it, it's official. It is not cool anymore to go to the movies with your mom. That was it. I'm like, he's starting high school in 2 weeks. I gotta get control here. I gotta find a common thing where we're gonna bond. So I did what anybody else in my shoes would do. I joined his fantasy football league. Even though I'm from Wisconsin, I know absolutely nothing about football. But what I got going for me is I'm competitive, and it is me against those nine little shits. And this mom is gonna do it. Get home from work, it's the night of the draft, I got my strategy ready. I am picking my team based on last names, okay? So, I need a quarterback, Tom Brady. Brady Bunch, favorite show growing up, boom. I need a kicker, Gostkowski. Polish name, I'm half Italian, boom, boom. So my team is doing pretty well. They're performing for me. Me and my kid are actually talking more than, hey, how was school? Fine. We're on the way to school and I'm going, Christ, did you see Miami? Their defense killed me. And he's going, oh, I know, Mom, I feel your pain. So I'm gonna take it one step further, okay? It's his 14th birthday. We're going to a Seattle Seahawks game, his favorite team in Los Angeles. October 8th, we land. I got exactly 46 hours to put as much fun as I can before kickoff. We filled our faces at In-N-Out Burger, cruised down the Hollywood Boulevard, saw the stars, went to the Wax Museum. That was it. Went back to the hotel exhausted. The plan was we go to sleep, we wake up in the morning, we watch a little bit of football, I drive us to the stadium at 11 a.m. Yeah, that plan didn't go over. All because of a cup of coffee. I was taking the elevator down to the hotel lobby to get a cup of coffee, and there she was, the ultimate Seahawks fan. I mean, I'm talking hawk tattoos, jersey, leggings. She's actually wearing blue and green Converse that are completely bedazzled with Go Hawks. We get into a conversation. The next thing you know, I got my coffee in my hand. I'm taking the elevator up. I whip open the door, turn on the light. My son's like, oh, Mom, come on. I'm like, dude, we got 30 minutes to get dressed, get downstairs. We are going to a tailgate party with Richard Sherman's parents. And he's like, what? And I'm thinking, I have no fucking idea who Richard Sherman is. But this lady just invited us, and we're sharing a lift, and you're going. We get to the game, we get pictures with Mama Sherman, we're hanging out, my friend, my new friend, gives him a poster. We get into the stadium, and she's like, "This is where you stand, Jackson, to get autographs." Oh my God, my shy, socially awkward kid is screaming at the top of his lungs, "Russell! Russell Wilson!" And all of a sudden, not only did Russell Wilson sign his jersey, 9 players signed that poster, and Pete Carroll, the coach, gave the kid a piece of gum. I was actually crying, okay? So we sit down, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, they gotta win! This trip cannot end with, yeah, it was really fun, and it would have been better if the Seahawks won. So we're in the stands, okay? It's the fourth quarter. I got a bunch of millennials sitting behind me that are completely calling the game the entire time. You know, there's a play, and they're like, yeah, okay, I'll take that. Okay. So the guy says to his friend, dude, you got to get me a beer. He's like, hey, get your own beer. He's like, No. It's 13-10 up, Seahawks. The last time I got up and got a beer, the Rams intercepted. It's like, oh my God, you're right. It's like, okay, you got, give me $8, I'll get your beer. Like, I don't have any money, what do you mean to get you a beer? And he's like, dude, you are not understanding me. I got up, I got a beer, I paid for the beer, and there was an interception. And the guy's like, oh my God, you're right. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, stop going back and forth. I'm about ready to pull out $8, throw it at the guy and say, listen, get the beer. He can't leave, they have to win. And if he doesn't win, it's on you. Okay, 5 seconds left in the game, right? And here comes Goff. The Seahawks are up 16-10. The Rams are in a position to score. Goff, he looks, he goes wide. He goes right down the middle, throws it to Kupp. Kupp doesn't make it, incomplete. Everybody's going crazy. I am jumping up and down. I am high-fiving people that I don't even know. The guy behind me spilling his beer. And then all of a sudden, my son, he reaches over and he gives me a hug. And he says, I love you, Mom. This was the best trip ever. For my 16th birthday, I want to go to Seattle and see a home game. And I'm like, okay. And I said, do you want to go with your dad this time or maybe a friend? And he's like, no, I want to go with you. And just like that, he knocked the wind right out of me.
That was Tina Moore. Tina has shared stories on Moth stages in Atlanta, Milwaukee, Santa Monica, and Houston. Her tales often center on her 2 dogs or beloved pets. She lives in Atlanta with her husband and 2 dogs, Dolly Waffles and Caesar. I asked Tina if she got more into football after the events of the story. Here's what she had to say. That fantasy football season was my one and only, finishing in the top 4, not too shabby for a rookie mom. From college kickoff, go Georgia Bulldogs, to the NFL's big game, football takes center stage in the Moore house. This past Christmas, the whole family gathered to watch the Georgia-Notre Dame championship game together. Truth, I still have no idea what's really going on, but I can definitely talk a good game. Honestly, Tina, same. Quick fact before the break. If you're wondering why we're calling it the big game, it's because a certain football organization owns the rights to the more commonly used name, and we do not want to make them mad. So if you ever see a bar ad for The Big Game or The Superb Owl, and you're thinking to yourself, why aren't they calling it what everyone calls it? Well, that's the reason. Stick around.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
There are a lot of reasons that people watch the big game. And if you ever wanted to know what the staff of a storytelling nonprofit thought about American football's biggest night, well, here you go.
the one time and the only time so far that the Seattle Seahawks won the big game, everybody was calling out of school, out of work, to come to the big parade afterwards. And I woke up that morning, my dad was like, you are not going to school, we are going to the parade. This is history.
Last year, I held a party where we ate superb, delicious dishes out of bowls, like dips and chili and punch, and I called it the Superb Bowl Party.
My most memorable moment was in 2001. I was watching my favorite team, the Rams, play the Patriots, and we lost in a last-minute field goal. I'll never forget how we didn't get those 30 seconds back or have that extra time, but I always will root against the Patriots going forward.
Having been born and raised in New Orleans, I haven't watched a game in all earnest since the Saints won. It was such a special time for our city.
My very favorite memory of the big game is when Prince performed at halftime. I mean, he sang Purple Rain in a driving rainstorm. I don't remember who played, but I'll never forget Prince.
Okay, so the big game for me was always about the food more than the actual game. The food and the commercials. We would always get all my college friends together starting at like 10 a.m. and we would just have the most inappropriately large spread of food, from like wings to every dip you can imagine, like the buffalo dip, the seven-layer dip. There was always like this one suspicious dip that you never really wanted to test until you'd had about 17 beers.
We'd love to hear your football stories, or really any story you might want to share. Go to themoth.org/pitchline to give a 2-minute version, and we might air it on the Moth Radio Hour or call you back to develop the story further for one of our Moth main stages. That's themoth.org/pitchline. For most of my life, I was never really a football person. Outside of tennis, I was never much of a sports person in general. However, I did have a Pittsburgh Steelers helmet that I wore pretty much continuously from the ages of 4 to 5. Was it because I saw a Mr. Rogers episode about Lynn Swann, the legendary Steelers receiver, performing ballet, and that somehow made me declare myself a huge football fan who would not let his mom take off his football helmet, even though I didn't actually understand the game of American football at all? Yes. Yes, it was. But for 1 year, when I was very little, I was the biggest football fan in my hometown of Brussels, Belgium. Our next storyteller also had a connection with the Pittsburgh Steelers from a young age. Adam Botner told this at a Chicago Story Slam, where the theme of the night was backwards. Here's Adam, live at the Moth.
So, in 1972, I am 10 years old, and I just fall in love with football. I love playing it with my friends every weekend in the park, and I love watching the NFL on Sundays every week. And I'm not very good at playing in the park, so I start focusing more on the watching of it on Sundays. And I just fall in love with everything about football. Now, my family had moved from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a couple years before. So in the early 70s, the Steelers became a great team. And 1972 was really the first year that they had been great in like 40 years. So that was the year I started liking football. So I decided I was going to be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And I fell in love with one particular player named Franco Harris. He was Rookie of the Year in 1972. He was a great running back from Penn State. And he was my guy. And the Steelers were great that year. And they went to the playoffs for the first time in 40 years. And I was so excited. And I stayed home to watch the playoff game. They played the Oakland Raiders in the first round of the playoffs. And the Steelers were losing 7-6 as time was running out. They had about 20 seconds left in the game. Terry Bradshaw, the quarterback for the Steelers, fades back. Probably the last play of the game. It was fourth down. It wasn't going to happen. He throws it downfield. Ball gets batted down. Game should be over. But out of nowhere, Franco Harris appears like magically and grabs the ball just as it's about to hit the ground. He shouldn't even have been in the area, supposedly. He picks it up. Nobody even tries to tackle because nobody can figure out what just happened. He runs 50 yards for a touchdown. The Steelers win. I'm out of my mind. I'm so excited. Franco Harris is my hero for life at this point. The Steelers are my favorite team. It's ridiculous how much I love the Steelers. And the crazy thing was, we had a friend in Pittsburgh who somehow became friends with Franco Harris somehow. And he knew how much I loved the Steelers and Franco. So he would send me stuff in the mail. I'd get an autographed picture. I'd get the Franco's Italian Army t-shirt, which Franco was part Italian, and the Italian community in Pittsburgh embraced him. So I was just so in love with Frank Harris. It was ridiculous, obviously. But you're a 10-year-old kid, and these things happen. You just get so focused on these things. It can only happen to a 10-year-old, you know? And I grow up, though, and I continue to be, you know, he continues to be my hero. It's just sort of ingrained in your brain. You can't help it. I loved Franco Harris so much that in 1975, I invited him to my bar mitzvah. I loved the man. And he was so cool that he actually sent me a telegram and said, I can't make it. I'm actually playing that Saturday night. I'll run up a few yards for you. And it just more etched in my mind how much I love Franco Harris. And so I was just so lucky. And this friend of ours, this Max Gomberg from Pittsburgh, he actually took me to two Super Bowls in the 70s. And that became my identity, was I was the guy from Pittsburgh. You know, I lived in Chicago, but I was the guy from Pittsburgh. I had the only, like, Pittsburgh Steelers jacket in the neighborhood. And I just love the Steelers. So now flash forward 40 years. And Max Gomberg actually became sort of my hero, too, because he did all these things for me. I don't know why. He was just such a good guy. I think he didn't have kids till later. And I was just this kid that he kind of took under his wing. And so, as happens to everybody, Max passes away. And he had a great life. And my family really didn't keep up with Max as much as I did. And so I flew out to Pittsburgh to go to his funeral because he was kind of my hero. And so I go to Pittsburgh. And in the back of my mind, I am kind of hoping that Franco Harris might be at the funeral. You know, I can't say that was my motivation, but I'm thinking that would be pretty cool if he was actually there. So I go to the funeral home and I say hi to Max's family and I'm looking around and there's no Franco. And I'm like, you know what? Grow up. You're 50 some odd years old. This isn't why you were supposed to be here. This wasn't supposed to happen necessarily. Just, you know, be a man, you know. So I start walking out of the funeral home and all of a sudden, Franco Harris walks in. And I was about to go to my car to go to the funeral procession to the cemetery, and the Franco Harris walks in and my jaw drops like a 10-year-old kid. I'm catapulted backwards in time to when I was 10. I was like, hey. And I couldn't contain it. And I'm fortunately, I didn't say anything. Because if I would have, it would have been really ridiculous. I would have been like making an absolute fool of myself at a funeral of all places, right? You just don't do that. So it was amazing that I had this wave of common sense that came over me and allowed me to not do this really stupid thing that I was contemplating. And so I get in my car and I'm about to start driving. And all of a sudden, I look, a silver Honda Pilot right in front of me. Franco Harris is getting into his car. So I thought maybe he was just paying his respects. He's going to go home. He's a busy man. He's like the mayor of Pittsburgh, basically. And now he's in his car. He's getting in the funeral procession. So I get in my car and I try and get, like, I get wedged in between so I can now be directly behind Franco Harris. Why it mattered that I was right behind Franco Harris's car in a funeral procession, I don't know why it was so important to me. But I was willing to, like, bang into other cars and stuff so I could be in the line right behind him. Obviously, once you're in the funeral procession, you're locked into that position. Nobody is going to be in back of Franco Harris besides me. And so I'm so excited. I'm calling my friends. I'm like, his license plate is X175. And I'm like so into the idea that I'm in the funeral procession behind Franco Harris. It's ridiculous. And I'm 50-something years old, so stupid. But I can't help it because it's like I'm a 10-year-old again. And so we get to the cemetery. He parks. I park right behind him. He walks right there to the cemetery, to the graveside service. And I'm like, oh, so I stand right next to him. And at this point, it's weird, right? I mean, it's just so ridiculous that I'm following this man around. So I'm standing next to Franco Harris, and finally I'm like, okay, grow up. You know, say something. You want to say something, say it. So I look at him, I go, Franco, I have to tell you. And I start telling him how I know him. And I said, Max was a very good friend of ours. And you have no idea how much you affected my life. You changed my life. That was my identity. I said, Max was my hero, but you were also my hero. And you have no idea how much you affected my life. It was, you were like my hero. And he goes, come here. And he hugs me with this big bear hug. And he's a big man. He's got these big bear hands. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. Like, I'm like catapulted to when I was 10 years old. I'm sure I had a dream. Not at the funeral, but I'm sure I had a dream about hanging out with Franco Harris. And, you know, over the past few years, I have, you know, been working on sort of, you know, working on myself. And I've been reading a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And it teaches, you know, be in the moment. Don't go in the past. Don't go in the future. Stay right here in the moment. And it is great. And it has changed my life. But I will tell you something. Sometimes going backwards feels really, really good.
That was Adam Botner. Adam lives in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, and is a director of legal solutions for a technology company. While his favorite pastime these days is telling stories, he has also written several screenplays, the most recent being Searching for Frenchie Fuqua. For more info, check out our show notes. I asked Adam if he had any thoughts on this year's playoffs. Here's Adam. The first playoff game I ever saw was December 23rd, 1972. The Steelers-Raiders immaculate reception game where Franco Harris miraculously grabbed the ball just before it hit the ground and ran 60 yards for a last-second touchdown to win the game. So, for me, that was a really high bar to set for playoff games ever since. Very excited for the playoffs and the big game this year, but since the Steelers lost in the first round, I'm rooting for the last remaining Pittsburgh-like city, the Buffalo Bills, to win it all. Apparently, the storytellers in this episode are cursed because the Bills also did not make the big game. Well, here's hoping that the Bills, and more importantly, the Steelers, have better luck next year. That's it for this episode. From all of us here at The Moth, we hope in your next big game, you score as many metaphorical touchdowns as possible. Mark Sullinger is the podcast producer of The Moth, the co-creator of the audio drama Archive 81, and the science fiction concept album Generation Crossing. He's a lover of museums, baking bread, and he's also someone who feels very strange reading his own bio. This episode of The Moth Podcast was produced by Sarah Austin Jeunesse, Sarah Jane Johnson, and me, Mark Sullinger. The rest of The Moth leadership team includes Sarah Haberman, Christina Norman, Jennifer Hickson, Kate Tellers, Marina Cluche, Suzanne Rust, Leanne Gully, and Patricia Ureña. The Moth Podcast is presented by Odyssey. A special thanks to their executive producers, Jenna Weiss-Berman and Leah Reese-Dennis. All Moth stories are true, as remembered by their storytellers. For more about our podcast, information on pitching your own story, and everything else, go to our website, themoth.org.